Okay. Those are a couple of things to start the discussion going, but pretty much you can say whatever you learned from the paper, and I'm going to, I mean, if there's anything I can add, I will. If not, yes, sir. Yeah. Semi-decidable means it is when the theorem is actually true, you can find the proof for it, you know, and terminate. When the theorem is not true, you will never be able to exhaust the search space. Because in the first order logic, essentially with functions thrown in, your Hilbert universe is infinite. And what that means is you will never see, normally in propositional logic, if you're trying to prove whether something is true or not, you will be able to exhaust the space after a while. So, and if you exhausted the space and you didn't find a theorem, you didn't find a proof. So, for example, if you're trying to solve and, you know, prove by resolution refutation, if you are not able to get an empty clause and exhausted all the space, then you know that the theorem is not true, it cannot be proved. If you did find it, you know that the theorem is provable. In the first order case, the exhaustion will never happen because the search space is infinite. Okay, because of which it's semi-decidable. And I think, as you guys know, I mean, we talked about in 471 at least, that only first order, it's semi-decidable. If you throw in induction axiom, mathematical induction into first order logic, then even checking that a theorem is true cannot be done. That's the Gödel's incompleteness theorem. That means there are, in any sufficiently expressive logic, there are theorems which are true but still cannot be proved. Okay. Yeah.
Where they stand to gain, it seems like, is they don't ground the entire universe. So first of all, they put limits on the size of the universe, because if it's incomplete, like for example, they put limits on the function. If they don't do that, then they cannot possibly unroll or ground the network, so to say. And then it looks like where they get the most efficiency is by restricting the grounding of the first order topology. So, so I mean, that was interesting, because it seems, I mean, what they say essentially is that Markov logic networks subsume all kinds of probabilistic models, all kinds of propositional probabilistic models. But ultimately, in the end, what they're doing is what everyone else does, which is to do this kind of limited grounding and then do inference on the ground literally. So
this is actually a very important thing, and I hope we'll get a perspective on this. The question is, there are actually two different points. One is, what Karthik is pointing out is that with all the hoopla about relational probabilistic networks, in the end, at least in this paper, which is their earliest paper, they're still talking about doing inference on the relational probabilistic network by actually grounding the network, right? And the knowledge-based model construction essentially says which small part of the network needs to be grounded, and then essentially do inference on that. Okay. So given that, the real question is there any advantage to relational models at all? What, if any, is the advantage of relational models? In fact, I could argue in a slightly different way. given their way of relational models. So for example, they have this thing, they have a quantified clause, and the quantified clause has a single weight, right? And the assumption then is, irrespective of what the groundings are of this quantified clause, the weight is the same. Okay, is this a bug or a feature? So one can argue, I would like to try and argue, put this devil's advocacy and say, look, looks like this entire relational probabilistic models is bogus, because anyway you are not doing, at least in this paper, you are not doing any inference on relational networks. You are only doing inference on ground networks. Okay? And furthermore, suppose in my world, it so happens that the strength, different friends have different levels of friendship, okay? And you know, my friends are more likely to be influenced by my smoking habit than your friends are, okay? Or vice versa, maybe you know, one of us is a stronger personality and we can influence our friends, whereas the other is kind of a weaker personality, they don't influence their friends as much. And it looks to me that a world like that, to model a world like that, you would essentially need anyway to ground. You need to say that, okay, Rao's, you know, you may as well just go with the ground networks. Whereas if you write a single relational clause with its weight, it looks as if you are reducing the power of expressivism. Okay, so what are we getting at all by relational networks?
So, firstly, introduction of weights on clauses is only extending the first order network. So, in true pure first order inference, every proposition, every formula would be given equal infinitely.
Mm-hmm.
But here we are only extending first order logic. So we can't be doing worse than what first order logic can be doing. So I wouldn't say that having weights on formulas is worse than doing first order. So what you're
No, but yeah. So that's one possibility, but I came to it from a different direction. So clearly we should be able to agree somewhere, you know. I'm sort of putting a paradox out there, you know, supposed paradox, which is that if you are anyway doing ground network based inference, should you be allowed to write a machine learning journal paper on relational probabilistic models? Is there any point to be, is there any point to, so for example, should everybody be, should these people be stopped from doing this work until they figured out how to do inference at non-ground level? Okay, now in fact, to put it in perspective, if they currently actually, there is work in probabilistic models, you know, relational probabilistic models, which does allow relational inference. That means it won't ground the entire network, even the piece that is needed, okay, but develops specific methods that will allow them to reason at the relational level. Okay, so you would, instead of having conditional probability tables for the ground level, you will actually just be doing everything at the relation level. We haven't talked about this. There is, that's like a sort of at the very edge right now. I mean, there have been some papers in the last 5-6 years. Okay, the question is, until that is over, should we just completely ignore relational networks, or is there another advantage for relational networks? Again, I'm basically messing with your brain in the sense that, you know, you have to have a reason as to why this is needed, and you know, if you understood it, then you should be able to circumvent my argument.
Now I can actually talk about
No, no, it has basically, all I am saying is I am taking the same clauses as they have, and I am saying I should be able to give, if you don't deal with these relational networks, you will allow me to say friends of Rav will smoke if Rav is smoking with weight 25, whereas friends of Tuvan will smoke if Tuvan is smoking with weight 32. I will be able to say it if I didn't have a relational network, right? Or not right? Okay, so here is the other thing.
Because
yeah.
It's not right, right? Because you, whenever you say friends of Rav, you simply just quantify over all your friends, right?
No, I could even do it in different things. I mean, I can even separate. If that is your issue, then I'll say friends of Rav, you know, whose friendship was because of, you know, professional, they have a different, I mean, actually what I'm saying is I may not want to quantify at all. I might want to have a separate weight for everything. That is, if I am smoking and you are my friend, you will only smoke with 22 net, you know, weight. And if I am smoking and he's my friend, his weight is different. Okay, for every pair, there's a completely different weight.
Yeah, but isn't the point that you can represent it? Fine, I'm arguing differently from you. You can represent it, I agree with you. But the problem is, if you're doing this on a ground level, you can't do anything useful with it. When you put it all together, right, in a knowledge base, if it starts contradicting, if this information, if these different weights start contradicting with each other, you can't do any useful inference. Whereas with what they're doing, the relational kind of representation, right, is you can actually, I don't know if this is the point you're making, but you can actually put it into a knowledge base such that it doesn't imply a contradiction. So you can
You can have contradictions at the ground level too. So let's change these things, and I want to also move on to a different thing. But can somebody make whatever I just said, can somebody make that argument? You know, you don't need to answer me, but just make the same argument I made, but with respect to dynamic based networks versus base networks. Do you even see the connection between the argument I made here to dynamic based networks? If you did, you took this class. If you didn't, you slept through this class. Right? So, yeah. So, what is the connection? Yes, what's the connection, Siddharth? By the way, there was a pop quiz in this class today, and the first 5 minutes. And people who are coming from outside, such as Loretta, will be given the pop quiz again. People who are in the coffee houses nearby, sorry. but that's okay. So what is the connection to the dynamic based network? Well, we are in the middle of a discussion about the fact that Markov logic networks, the paper, their inference is mostly being done at the ground level in this paper. In later papers, they actually have extended it to do lifted level inference. So the question is, if you are doing inference anyway at the ground level, then is there really any need for understanding relational networks? And the same the question I'm asking is with respect to dynamic based network. I mean, and then we had some discussion on that, and I'm trying to say that can you not say the same thing with respect to base networks and dynamic based networks? Suppose dynamic based networks, the inference on the dynamic based networks is being done by just unrolling them and do the ground level inference. We could do that. In fact, that is a reasonable way of doing it. Okay? Then the question is, would at that point, would it be the case that dynamic based networks don't have to be discussed separately from just normal based networks? In both, the answer is the same, which is the whole point of relational networks is when there is structure, you should be able to exploit it. When there isn't any structure, you can just do what the ground networks are doing. So whatever I was saying was obviously kind of misleading, because nobody stopped me in Markov logic networks from writing ground clauses. Whereas if I was a Markov network person, I had no way of saying that 15 different connections all have the same potential function. Do you understand what I'm saying? So if you have a single quantified clause, right? Now, when you make a full grounding of the entire network, maybe finitely large or infinitely large, then this particular clause will come in multiple different instantiations. Each instantiation normally requires a separate potential function. Each potential function requires separate set of parameters. You need to learn all of them. If you wanted to say all of them have the same parameter, you could not say it at the ground level. You can say it at the lifted level. The same thing for dynamic based networks. We talked about this. What's the equivalent for dynamic based networks? Suppose you don't have stationarity. Suppose you don't have stationarity. That means, in fact, the probabilities change from each time slice to the next time slice. That's okay, then it will become normal unrolled Bayes network with exponential number of parameters. But suppose you do have stationarity, how do you say that unless you have a template representation? And so when there is structure, you want to be able to say there is structure. And then normally when there is structure, the one thing that certainly is helped by the structure, I mean, the inference is learning. Okay, we more or less already said inference, basically we are still doing it at the ground level. There is one thing that has to be helped, at least one of them should be helped, otherwise what are we wasting our time for? What does get helped is learning, right? Because we mentioned this, in fact we talked about this at the dynamic Bayes network level. If in fact you had a single, suppose you have a two slice Bayes network and you make stationarity assumption. That means the same parameters will be occurring from T0 to T1, T1 to T2, T2 to T3, T3 to T4. Okay, so now if I give you, remember that rain, finally we actually have rain and umbrellas, right? right? And so if we in fact are giving the rain umbrella scenario, we're giving the data, training data. The training data is first day, the guy came with umbrella. Second day, that guy didn't come with umbrella. Third day, they came with umbrella. Fourth day, they didn't come with umbrella. Okay? Now, if I give you 4 days worth of a 4 day sequence of a single person, it becomes 4 data points for a dynamic Bayes network. And it becomes 1 data point for a non-stationary dynamic Bayes network because it's possible that T0 to T1 parameters are different from T1 to T2 parameters. And it's completely non-stationary, then even if I give you one single person's umbrella habits for infinite number of days, I basically just gave you one example. Okay? The same thing with the smokers thing. If we do not make the assumption that the smoking habits transmitted to their friends is independent of the constant values. If you don't have that, then every person's friend, smoking because of the person smoking is a completely different example. And you need to learn those parameters completely differently. Learning becomes out of this world hard without relational structure. Okay, so that's the thing that I want you to remember, for a relational structure, that's like the biggest advantage. Even if you do everything else the same, it provided you a way of saying that a whole bunch of parameters thrown out in different parts of the ground network, they're all the same. And so it reduces the number of parameters you need to learn. And another way of looking at it is the same amount of data goes much longer for you. So previously, if I had 15 people and their friend smoking habits, that would have been one example, that's all. Now it is 15 different examples because they're all, 15 different examples for the same parameters, so I can learn the parameters much better. Okay, now you can say, look, what if in fact some people have different, I mean, so a certain class of friends. So, for example, what if you want to say eventually that, well, smoking among friends has different weights in southwestern United States and northeastern United States. Fine. Then eventually you will split this one class into two classes and learn two parameters. But in the beginning, you start with a strong bias that I can explain everything with a few number of weights. And if you don't have that, learning is so hard that you will never basically be able to generalize from anything. Do you understand what I'm saying? So I want you to keep that in mind, you know, in terms of why relational learning is important, because it gives you the thing that's the least interesting in this paper, presumably, is the first two pages. But I argue that that is the most interesting part, because it is providing you a way of saying that potentials thrown all around a big network, they're all the same. Okay? Other points? And you know, that's the basic idea. It's like I mentioned when I started talking about dynamic Bayes network, I mentioned one of the reasons I'm interested in dynamic Bayes networks is because they're also templated representations and they're connected to relational networks. That's exactly what we are saying right now. Essentially, for a whole class of dependencies, you're saying the parameters are the same. Yeah, and that's a huge bias you are putting in. That's a bias you are putting in, and it's basically what relational networks are trying to tell you is they're providing you a way for expressing your biases as to what is common in this world. And if your biases are wrong, well, you're going to learn the hard way. But you can start by saying, I don't want to be biased. And remember, you cannot get through this world without being biased. You would die right away. You know, I think I mentioned this long back that, you know, if a kid does not want to learn the names of objects because when their parents show them, look, that's a bus. Now the kid might be thinking, who knows which part of that is the bus? You know, the wheels may be the bus. The lug nuts on the wheel may be the bus. The person running it may be the bus. The people in the bus may be the bus, the windows may be the bus, so I'll wait until I get a huge number of extra examples before figuring out what is a bus. And then such a kid would be run over by the bus before it actually learns any more examples. Okay? So there is a whole object bias you start with, which works more or less, and if it doesn't work in this universe, then such people are gone. I mean, you know, if your biases don't work in your universe, you are probably not here. Okay, so that's the thing that relational networks are helping you with. Yes, sir.
So in this instance, almost like bias and background knowledge and structure are almost totally connected.
They're all connected, indeed. Indeed. Now, how did you decide, for example, which ones to write? So, for example, you know, one of the interesting things that this paper basically says is it assumes that you know how to write logical theories. Okay, and you just don't know how to get the numbers, and they are getting you how to learn the numbers. Okay, but however, how do we know what is the right way to write logical the clauses governing your world? Maybe in fact there are special cases about, you know, how smokers affect other smokers. Okay, and if you know that, you will put that into two different clauses. Like you might say, for all x, y, such that x and y are from Southeast Asia and X is smoking, then Y will smoke with a much higher weight than if X, Y are from Western Europe and X is smoking, then Y will smoke. A different weight. Do you see what I'm saying? So that's where you express your biases. And in a way, if you write two different clauses, then in essence you're saying there are two different kinds. So for example, if you know, Rao and, you know, Lu are from Southeast Asia, then their potential function for that particular connection would be the second clause's one. whereas two other groundings, Tom and Mary, they are from, you know, Western Europe, then their potential function would be up from the first class. Their weight from the would be from the first class. I'm using the word weight and potential function interchangeably because that's what we explained last class, that you can basically think of weights, log linear model weights, as potential functions too. Okay? And so, and you know, one of the issues, yeah, so that's the, and then, so one of the things that was interesting in the previously was, where does the model of the network come from? Where does the model of the network come from? And here, basically, the logical theory is the topology of the network. The logical theory is providing the topology. And the weights are what you're learning from the, weights are what you're learning from the data. Now, we mentioned a lot of times that learning topology is harder than learning weights in Bayes networks case, for example. What that means is learning logical knowledge is actually harder in this context. What that means is learning logical knowledge is harder than learning weights. Okay, so learning logical knowledge of the type these things tend to affect these things is harder than, I think the effect, you figure out exactly what is the intensity of the effect, which you can learn from the data. Okay? Other points? What?
When you're learning weights for a given two things that are connected, there's a connection between the two formulas. The domain of that over the formula of life somehow is indicating data, which is the concept. So, I mean, what I want to say is basically, when you actually start looking at the data, the formula may not apply.
No, that's basically the universes of the, I mean, I think all you're saying essentially is, if in fact my clauses are all typed such that I said for all x, y, such that x, y belong to Southeast Asians, then here is a clause. And for all y, z, such that y and z belong to Western Europe, here is a clause. So when you ground this clause, you only take X and Y which belong to Southeast Asia. When you ground this clause, you only take Y and Z which only belong to Western Europe. Okay? And, you know, yeah. So the one thing, of course, yeah, okay. What are the other points people want to talk about? Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
With the weight, another thing that they talk about is that they're using first order logic, which is sort of like hard constraints. And when they're using the weight, they are turning this into soft constraints, so that when formula is not satisfied, then the whole thing doesn't get less probable. So they can, like, they can use several databases that if you put them together are consistent. And if you do that in first order logic, it will just give you consistency and you cannot do anything. But using Markov logic, they can
So yes, that's obviously you know, from a logic point of view, it is allowing inconsistencies to come in without blowing up things, you know, because you're providing probabilistic semantics. Two related questions. One I already forgot. One of which is it better or worse to have clauses that are actually deterministic in a Markov logic network. So basically you have a whole bunch of clauses, they all have weights, okay, and some of the clauses basically are soft, some are not. I presumably you know how to set weights such that, you know, which are hard, which are soft. Now the question is, if I know deterministic clauses, these clauses always hold, okay, is that going to be better overall or worse overall, both practically and theoretically, for Markov logic networks? Actually, there is also a different point, which is, how do they do their inference? What did they talk about inference for the Markov logic network? No, but basically they compute, you know, given a query, they compute the piece of the, you know, network that is needed. So the essentially, you know, think about it this way. MLN clauses implicitly determine a huge, huge Markov network, a huge ground Markov network, which you never write down. These clauses, in essence, determine that, you know, based on the number of constraints you have. Okay? Given a query, what is the probability of F1 given F2? Okay? Then this formula F1 is talking about some ground atoms, GA1, GA2, etc. And this is talking about some other ground atoms, GA3, GA4. Each ground atom is a node in this huge big ground network. The idea of knowledge-based model construction is to exactly construct the part of the network, part of this overall network, that essentially includes just these guys, and their Markov blanket. Okay? Then you essentially get a subset of this network. The rest you don't care. You just compute that at that time, at the query time. Okay? At the query time you compute this network, and then you do inference on it. Okay, so after you compute this network, then you get back to what we were doing last few previous classes and also in 471, which is, given a query on a ground network, how do you compute the probability of that query, distribution of that query? So now the question is, how do they do that ground network inference? The knowledge-based model construction is this: how do they do the ground network inference? What? Yeah, they basically do MCMC, Markov chain Monte Carlo. So if you have deterministic connections, would Markov chain Monte Carlo be happier or unhappier? One of the interesting things is, if you have deterministic connections, then there is no chain in the Markov chain, right? It won't be irreducible. Okay, basically there will be parts of the network that you can't reach from the piece that you are in. Okay, the important thing about I asked you this question on the test. Ergodicity. Okay, you lose ergodicity if you have deterministic connection. Okay, and so it's not bad necessarily, but for anybody who is looking at trying to go from part of the world to part of the world by hitchhiking, as it were, okay, will not necessarily be able to hitchhike from New York to London, because there is an ocean there. That doesn't mean that you cannot go from New York to London. There are other ways of going from New York to London. Okay, so essentially Markov chain Monte Carlo based methods become actually worse with deterministic connections. So this is sort of a minor paradox. On one hand, more deterministic, less need for probabilities, it should be easy to deal with. Okay, but on the other hand, since you are using Markov chain Monte Carlo, before you use Markov chain Monte Carlo, you better, if in fact there are deterministic classes, you need to cut the network into different pieces and do MCMC in each of them. Otherwise, you will never reach stationary distribution. Okay, so that was one of the points regarding whether determinism actually helps or not. I mean, when you first read this, you should be confused. I mean, you should be surprised that, you know, I would have thought determinism would be the easy case, you know. But in fact, if you combine both, then nearly deterministic classes would make their inference go haywire. Because the way Markov chain Monte Carlo works, again, if you remember, is that it will start from a reasonable initial configuration, right? And then pick a node, resample that node given its neighbors. It will get a new configuration, pick another node, resample it given its neighbors, get another configuration, and then you keep going around this, you know, space of configurations. And the assumption, and so each configuration would be one of the ground configurations over this n variable. So there are 2n such nodes. And you have an essentially a Markov chain in these 2n nodes, and if you go around them long enough, then you will reach stationary distribution. The dirty secret about Markov chain Monte Carlo is that it's easy to make one step. It's hard to know when to stop. To stop, essentially, you have to say, I have reached the stationary distribution. Okay? And first of all, it could take a long, long time to reach the stationary distribution. And second of all, I mean, there is a minor issue that you should know when you reach a stationary distribution. And there are ways of doing that. But the bigger issue is you may not actually reach the stationary distribution. It may take a long number of very cheap operations. Each operation is cheap. You need a gazillion billion of them, so you're spending still lots of time. So then you might say, well, I just run the MCMC for like 15 minutes, whatever it gets me, and then I'll assume that that's the stationary distribution. That's doable. Except in those cases, if unbeknownst to you, I have some deterministic dependencies thrown in, then in 15 minutes, you may have figured out close to stationary distribution on a small piece of the network. The rest are all unconnected because you never even, never even reached into them. If you need to reach into them, you don't have their distribution. Okay?
So,
yes, you have to do it beforehand. Okay? Other comments? Mm-hmm. Okay.
So does that return a true value or does that return a similarity value? Like a double between 0 and 1?
Other comments? Yeah, they do lifted inference.
So does that mean that they can afford to relax this object assumption, like that they can actually deal with infinite?
They have actually a couple of papers on infinite domain.
Okay. Because this is interesting to me because so in planning, for example, right, there's this analogous problem where if you can either try to do like a lifted kind of planning, which nobody knows how to do anyway, or you can do this approach which all planners do nowadays, which is ground the database, ground the entire ground the domain out, right, with the objects that are part of your problem. Of course, this becomes a problem. In fact, this, I think this is related to the paradox that you were mentioning, that as the number of objects increases, right? So it's kind of related, because in, even in planning, for example, as the number of objects increases, it becomes the need for a lifted kind of inference grows more and more. But the problem also with a lifted kind of inference is, unless you have real lifted inference, you're going to do this unrolling or grounding or whatever, right? Then you're in just as much trouble, because ultimately you're going to have to ground your entire lifted theory with all the objects in your all the objects in your space.
Okay, but again, so go ahead.
There's a similar amount of trouble. You can still specify it much more briefly with the relational representation.
Yeah.
So at least you don't need a program to write the program to unroll into some kind of. So the specification becomes a lot easier. But yes, as long as you're grounding, you're going to have exponential growth in the database size split up. And the Markov network, whatever you're going to build to do the planning, is obviously growing exponentially in that space. So, yeah.
This is why I'm interested in this lifted thing.
Yeah, okay, there are several points you made, but you know, one of which I want to get back to, which is lifted planning, just so that you have some idea of what are the trade-offs in lifting, because we just mentioned a lot about that. But a second issue is really, think of higher level languages, C. I hate to say that, you know, together, Python, you know, right? Okay, how does it get actually executed? How is the inference done on the language at the assembly level? Mm-hmm. So if in fact inference at higher level is the most important thing, then we shouldn't have higher level languages at all. Basically, we should be just as happy writing programs at assembly level as we are at, you know, higher level languages. Higher level languages are used because they're easier to specify. Equivalently, they're easier to learn. Inference on higher level languages oftentimes is completely done at the lowest level possible, which is at the ground level. There are some little techniques. Sometimes, for example, there may be program optimization techniques that might work at the higher level itself to say, oh, okay, these loops are not reachable, or this macro can be simplified, etc. But there is no C machine. Okay? And there used to be a Lisp machine, and that didn't go too far. We talked about this. You know, Lisp machine basically finally fell by the wayside because there are many more people working on the Intel machine. And they could improve their, you know, their speed every 3 days. Whereas Lisp machine guys will first have to make it, expect some AI people to actually make money and buy a couple of machines, and by that time it will be a couple of decades, and then they will make the next level of the Lisp machine. Okay? So I want you to first remember that inference at the lifted level is not a requirement for higher level languages. It's not a requirement. And in fact, basically the requirement for higher level languages really is ease of specification, which means if there is structure, previously if you only have ground Markov nets, then they had to write one such clause for each pair of, you know, people, and then say the same weight, one more, same weight, one more, same weight. Now you just allow them one simple way of writing a single clause, which is essentially talking about exponential, or, you know, if in fact you allow infinite domains, infinite, you know, if you allow true functions, then infinite domain, you know, infinite number of clauses. So it's always a specification. Okay, that's the first thing. The second thing about lifting is that I want you to understand, I mean, I don't think I have the ability right now to explain to you how lifted inference works for probabilistic reasoning, for Bayes network inference and Markov inference, but I will tell you how the lifted inference works for planning, which mostly understand, because you have, you know, if you have a bunch of actions with effects and preconditions, right? If you have if you have, you know, put on XY is your action, okay? It has preconditions holding X, clear Y, and it has effects on X, Y, not clear Y. Okay, and hand empty. Okay, now this is basically classical planning. You know, we almost didn't even bother repeating it in this class because that was done in 471, and then we went from here and said, well, you can then do you can do non-deterministic actions, which means you can have sets of such effects, for example. Okay, but here's my first question: how do you specify domains? Even in classical planning, all domains are specified at this level. What?
You still have to unroll even that. Like
No. This is where you specify. This is a relational specification.
Yeah.
Most current day planners actually ground them and use ground operators in planning. But it was not needed at all. If you were actually alive before 95, every planner that was being written about was a lifted planner. Okay? And they never actually ground an action at all. In fact, I'll explain to you how that would work, and you'll understand it quite easily, and you'll hopefully also understand what are the trade-offs in doing lifted inference mechanisms. Okay? So suppose you're trying to do regression. Okay? If you're trying to do regression, and suppose you needed, in fact, one of the interesting things would be, yeah, so suppose you try to do regression, yeah, and you have a goal not clear B. That's your goal. Okay? One idea is you have ground operators. You have ground operators such as put on A, B, put on C, B, put on C, D, all these ground operators. And if you have any ground operators, then you go into your library of operators. Pick an operator, let's say put on CB, put that into the plan, okay, and put on CB will give you not clear B, and it will require as its preconditions on holding C, clear B. Right? And then you just go backward using, again, these ground actions. This is how the current day regression planners work. Okay? But I would say this is actually unnecessary commitment. What you really needed was B not to be clear. Okay? By working in the search space, you know, this corresponds to a single branch in the search space. In this branch, you have decided that the way you're going to make B not clear is by putting C on top of B. At this point, you don't know whether or not C is liftable. In normal blocks world, all blocks are equally easy to lift. Okay? But suppose, even in your world, suppose this is the way. This is the way the initial state is. Okay, all you needed is B not to be clear. By just without looking at the initial state, you say C can be the guy I'll put on top of B. Now to make C liftable, you need to put every guy down, take C, put it on B, which is an unnecessarily long plan. Do you see what I'm saying? What you should have done is waited to see who would be the right person to put on top of B, and make the decision later when things become clearer. Okay, postpone the decision for which you don't have enough information. Okay, that is what you can do if you do lifted reasoning. What you would do here is you will say, well, really, I only have a single action schema. You know, this is bogus. This is basically what your planner did. I gave you this as the domain specification. Okay, just as Markov logic networks gave a lifted clause as a domain specification, and because you didn't know how to do anything other than dealing with ground operators, you just did grounding and then use the ground action. Okay, an alternative is don't ground. and directly use what is given in the domain specification. Let's say put on XY. How does it work now? All I need to do is support not clear B. I know that put on XY has not clear Y. If I can unify Y and B, it would be not clear B. Right? So I make myself, I have a bag of constraints. And where I write X equal to B. X equal to B. Okay? Now, as soon as I do this, at this point, as far as I'm concerned, this is already supporting not clear B. Because I'm going to make sure X equal to B. Okay? I'm sorry, it's Y equal to B. I'm sorry. Y equal to B. Okay? And then I have a new, so this looks great, right? And then what do I get here? I need a previous state. The previous state is holding X. Okay, in fact, make it even more interesting. This is my initial state. Okay, my initial state was like this. I was holding Q and I said make B not clear, and in my example you put on CB, so which would have involved putting Q down, putting everybody down, putting C up, putting it on top of B, you would have achieved the goal, but in an unnecessarily long way. Okay. Now, of course, if you're using A star search, you would have done that, you would have killed that branch and then gone to the right branch and got the shorter plan. But here what I do is I say, well, I actually put on XY will require holding X and clear Y, but Y equal to B, so clear B. Looks great, isn't it? So now all I need to do is to support holding X, I can actually say initial state support holding X. Initial state already supports clear B. Initial state supports holding X, X equal to Q. Initial state already supports clear B. So I'm done. Right away. No more false moves. This is lifted reasoning. This is lifted regression. The question is, why aren't people using it? No, there is no more backtracking here than anywhere else. What actually happens is what I'm pushing down below is per node cost has increased significantly. Okay? The per node cost now involves, I mean, this is an easy problem. In other cases, what might happen is you have a bunch of variables and you are, each of them need a home, and there may be inconsistencies. You are double counting, you know, the same home for different guys, and the only way you can check is if the set of constraints are consistent. To check whether a set of constraints are consistent is NP-complete. Okay? So per node cost becomes NP-complete. Now, is that a problem? Not really. Because you can either make per node cost NP-complete and do exponentially fewer nodes, or per node cost very cheap and do exponentially many nodes. From a data structure point of view, handling ground is easy. Because, you know, each search algorithm doesn't need to have these kinds of constraint propagation, you know, constraint checking mechanisms. Okay? Especially on small toy size problems, you know, it becomes much better. And because of which, in fact, you know, unlike what you said, until 95, everybody was actually doing lifted planning. They gave up and went to ground planning. And then around 95 is when people from Markov decision processes, and this is like pendulum swinging all the way back to the beginning of this semester, people from Markov decision processes said, okay, lifted and ground, we are talking about factored and relational. Markov decision processes guys were below ground, and they were thinking, man, these guys actually have factors. Okay, instead of just saying S1 is a black box, they actually have some notion of what the state is made up of. And so they were making a beeline. In fact, that 90-page paper that you read of Boutillier was him basically salivating at the fact that, you know, planning guys know how to deal with the factored and as well as relational, although mostly he talks about factored, atomic. So he's doing, so we had atomic propositional, relational, first order, right? That was the different kinds of representation. MDP is at the atomic. Pretty much every planning process is being done at propositional. But the planning theories were provided at a relational level. And many old planning algorithms were being done at relational level. And just when people from here were coming towards planning, saying, my God, they know how to do relational planning, we, and in planning, I mean, I say we because I'm also in planning, but, you know, planning people were going to ground representations, the atomic representations, because they got sick and tired of having to handle constraints as part of individual nodes. Okay? If you read a lifted representation, a lifted Bayesian network inference paper, there are some that I can send you easy references to. Okay? Essentially, the per node complexity, even understanding what happens in a single node, is harder. Okay, I would actually argue that compared to both this, which is, you know, in terms of X and Y, R, A and B, put on A, B, okay, both these kinds of regression are harder to understand than saying if you are, you're trying to reach SG and in your transition matrix, it says if you are in SB and you do A, you get to SG. In which case, regression is put A and put SB here. So understanding what happens per node is even easier at the state level, becomes slightly harder at the factored level, even harder at the relational level. But conceptual understanding is not connected to computational complexity. Okay, computational complexity wise, this could actually be much better. I mean, we already know that the factored is much better than this, and this could be much better than factored. Okay. And part of what is currently happening is nobody has been able to show conclusively, you know, that no field has been able to show conclusively that lifted representation, lifted inference techniques can significantly outperform the ground inference techniques. This is almost similar to, you know, the fact that data structures are easier to write for the ground techniques. Yeah, most of them are done at the ground level.
But that, shouldn't then that searching in the bag of constraints satisfy the
need? I understand. Yes, yes, it should be. What I mean, when you put it in, so the question is, can you write a planner which does lifted search and beats the heck out of the current winner? It's the same thing. If I want to write a list machine, you know, I can argue that, oh, list machine should be easy to design. List machine should work well. Python machine should work well. How can Intel machine be any better than Python machine? The only way you can actually get Python, you know, people to buy Python machines is you make a Python machine which is cheaper than an Intel machine or equal to the Intel machine's cost and runs faster than Intel machine or equal to Intel machine's speed. Until then, you can just stand up on top of the roofs and keep yelling at people saying, you know, you should all do this and you'll be just a religious preacher. Nobody will, you know, listen to you necessarily without proof. You know, I mean, that's why religious preachers have no hope, because they keep saying something will happen after you're dead, but nobody really knows what happened. And, you know, then, you know, it's very hard to convince people. You show a proof, then, you know, people will come and buy your machine. And so lifted reasoning is not dead. And what's interesting is people without lifted reasoning salivate for it. Probabilistic networks is, you know, a case in point. So they're all writing papers on lifted reasoning. And people with lifted reasoning move on from it. You know, planning people had lifted reasoning. And in fact, if you think this is lifted, where you have variables, partial order planning is actually even more least committed. Because it not only talks about, I mean, in normal partial order planning, you also don't decide on the ordering between the actions. Plus, you don't decide the variable bindings. So in a normal partial order planner, you have two different constraint buckets, one over the orderings, one over the bindings. And if you are smart enough, you can make a constraint bucket which is actually combines both of them. So it's an even harder constraint satisfaction problem. Okay, and you know, those techniques exist. It's just nobody has been able to show that, you know, the place where it matters, which is, and you know, here are two implementations. One, the state of the art, ground level, and here is mine, and mine does work faster. You show it, you are in, you know, you can bring back. I mean, I think there are enough reasons to believe lifted reasoning would work, but as I mentioned long back, many times in the past, intuitions about search are always very, very misleading. You know, in fact, for example, for the longest time, as I mentioned, people would not use costly heuristics because per node you would spend too much time computing the heuristic, and that should be able to eat up into your search time. And yet, it actually worked out better sometimes. Okay, what I did here is the kind of things. Although, I mean, you know, Bayes' network reasoning is not exactly planning. Okay, you have to have variables, and you have to have co-designation constraints over variables. You need to be able to maintain the constraints over variables. That's what gets done in lifted reasoning for either Markov logic networks or Bayes' networks and so on. But even if you don't do this, there is a good reason as to why you want to specify a domain model at this level. If you do not, let's say, if you don't believe that there is a single put on XY for blocks world, then learning blocks world domain model would become much, much harder. Because even after a huge number of examples, you finally figured out whenever you try to put A on B, if you are not already holding A, you don't get to do it. If B is not already clear, you don't get to do it. So you learned it. So you are actually able to say for put on AB, holding A is required precondition, clear B is required precondition. But if you didn't think there was a relational structure to that domain, then that's where you stop. You finally figure out put on AB. You still have to figure out put on BC, you still have to figure out put on CD, put on CA, everything separately. Okay? Yes? What? Yes, it'll take much longer time. If the kids didn't come into this world without whole object bias, and if they actually avoid too many trucks from hitting them, they will eventually figure out that whole object bias sort of works, or that certain classes of objects have similar properties. But this gives them a head start in terms of reducing this. No, if you happen to know this about your domain, why won't you say it? Whereas if it's a domain where you have no clue what's going on, okay, you don't know what are the classes. And so in that case, you have to learn the classes. And a good language should be able to allow you to specify structure when you know it and become just as bad as the ground language when you don't. It should stop you from, you know, and for example, you can say anything you want to say in assembly in most higher level languages. Plus you get to say things which, you know, a single statement becomes 15 lines of assembly code. Right? Yes?
This analogy between higher level languages and assembly code and first-order logic and prepositional, there is a fundamental difference that first-order logic is more explicit than prepositional.
Well, that's basically the infinite function. Yeah. But even without it, I don't want you to get hung up on that. Because even without that, you still want to do relational learning. Okay, there are a few cases, I mean, there are definitely a few cases where you do want the extra expressiveness in terms of, you know, infinite number of constants specified through basically unnamed functions. They called named functions, unnamed functions. So f of a could be different from f of a, right? All they are saying is all of them eventually would have to be corresponding to some known blocks whose names we know, which means all these functions are essentially finite domain functions. Okay. Now, even if, while you can lose expressiveness by not having that, you're talking about, I mean, you could say, I mean, again, think about this, atomic, prepositional, relational, first order. Okay. If I can't go there, might as well stay here. Makes no sense. Do you see what I'm saying? I mean, if you can't go there, you can still be here. Right? Which is what Markov logic networks are. They're basically relational. I mean, you know, Pedro keeps writing a couple of papers once in a while saying there is this infinite domains, etc., mostly to kind of impress people like Chitta. But, you know, that's not the important thing. I mean, there is, the issue is you're going this way. Okay. One other thing, actually, What are the other things that people want to talk about? I definitely wanted to talk about one thing before. We're already 3:15. So we could have gotten done with this semester much faster, it looks to me, at least from my point of view. We discussed everything. I made a mistake. What other points we want to talk about? Yeah, what are you saying? No, you can have relational CP networks. Because the semantics of preferences are different from the semantics of probabilities. You shouldn't assume that probabilities and preferences are one and the same. So you can have relational CP nets as against factored CP nets, which are, you know, basically atom, you know, which are propositional CP nets, is what you have done till now. You can have relational CP nets, and that would be, you know, I think that's the direction that everything is going to go towards, because essentially at the minimum you want to be able to specify things at a higher level, and you should at least owe it to yourself to see if the lifted inference actually works out. Learning already works out. The moment you give, you know, specification at the higher level, learning becomes easier, because the same number of examples become much larger number of examples for the lifted case, because it's assuming that, you know, what you thought were completely different parameters, they're all the same. Okay. So one other thing, actually, in fact, is why pseudo likelihood. I would have liked to actually discuss this, but we are running out of time, so let me actually just at least tell you. Yeah, so let me tell you my version of what is happening with that, with respect to what we did last class. So this is basically connecting the learning discussion in this paper to the learning discussion that we did until last class. Okay. Notice that just because you became relational doesn't change learning. It makes learning easier. It makes inference harder. Okay, because at least you need to do KB model construction and decide what your ground network is and then do the inference. Or you have to do something like actually lifted inference directly. Learning becomes easier in lifted, because it just says what you thought was 1 million parameters are only 100 parameters. So why should you be unhappy? Okay. Now, so all their points about learning really are points about Markov network learning. They have really nothing to do with Markov logic network learning, because Markov logic network learning is easier, if anything, than Markov network learning. Okay. So this business about the point that they made about pseudo log likelihood, I want to at least give you an entry into where that comes. You know, if you have figured that out, it's great. If not, you will hear it here. So at the end of last class, we had this slide where we basically pointed out that if you were to compute the gradient for the log likelihood, okay, it can essentially be written as the difference between two quantities. One is the empirical expectation of how many times so remember, this weight is for this particular feature fi. So this particular part is telling you how many times was ith feature true in the data you actually watched, that you got for the training. And this one is saying how many times is the ith feature expected to be true given your current network configuration. Notice that the current network configuration is not the final network configuration. You are making little steps in the space of network theta values, such that according to the current theta values, the expected number of times fi was supposed to happen in the data, okay, was this. And this is how much it really happened in the data. The bigger that difference, the more change you need to make to the parameter, because they should be able to predict the data. right? So this was obviously understandable definition of the gradient. I mean, you actually did computation and then, you know, actual derivation and found this, it's a gradient. But the problem with this gradient is this, especially, because you need to compute expected value of a clause given the current parameter values, which in essence is an inference over the network, because it's a query over the network. Okay? Now, that means every time you compute the gradient, you have to do a query over the network. That could become costly per gradient step. Okay? Now, the question then is, should we, and in fact towards the end of last class I mentioned this and I wrote a slide after I went, which is, why should we care about computing the gradient exactly? Why can't we just make some sort of an approximation? And one thing you need to be careful about it is, in the multidimensional case, if you got one of the dimensions particularly wrong, that means you are going off in a completely different direction. So approximation is okay, but you should be careful about how to approximate the gradient. Okay? So this is where So, in fact, the same issue, basically, whatever we showed previously is also done in the Markov logic network case, where instead of calling them features, he calls them clauses. This is the number of times ith clause has been found to be true in the data. These are called the true clause groundings. Okay? And this is the number of times it's expected to be true, given the current weight values, which are the current parameter values. And this is the one, and in fact, in their case, they say both of these are hard to compute. This one requires, for a particular database, finding the true ground clauses, true groundings itself is costly. But bigger problem is this, you would be doing inference per step, and that's too painful. So the idea, and this is a normal problem with Markov networks, and MLNs depended on Markov networks, and again, to repeat my point, if anything, whatever is the problem for MNs, they become easier for them, not harder. Okay, so they're not introducing any extra problems. So whatever these problems I'm talking about are actually problems with MN, which is for doing likelihood-based gradient descent in Markov networks, you need to do the inference. That doesn't work, okay, because the gradient is hard to compute. So an idea is to try and optimize a different objective whose maximum, hopefully, is at the same place that log likelihood's maximum is. This is not a bad thing at all. So think about it this way. In fact, this is a very, very powerful idea in general. Suppose you have a function like this. This is not convex. If you try to do gradient descent, you can get stuck in all kinds of weird places. But suppose I said, why don't you optimize this function? I don't know how I came up with that, but if I gave you this, you would be a happy camper, because everything you did in the middle is nonsensical, but the only place where it counts, you are exactly the same optimum as the original likelihood. Gradient descent on this function is extremely easy compared to gradient descent on this, because it can get stuck in all sorts of places. Okay, so that's the basic thing. So in Markov networks, what they try to do is find an alternative objective to optimize and hope to show that that has basically a maximum at the same place. Not always would that happen, but it can happen. To understand this, you realize that the two parts that we had, the number of times, this is basically, if you just have a single data point, then the log likelihood corresponds to two factors. One is the probability, log probability of that data actually occurring. Okay? Minus log of the probability of all other data that could have occurred. Because expected value is a summation over the other data with their probabilities. Okay? So if I'm optimizing this, I am trying to optimize the distance between what I observed and what else could have happened given the network configuration. So in doing this, the full log likelihood, what you do is the log probability of all other possible data instances. And if I said all other possible data instances, I'm dead because I have to do the full inference. I can reduce the cost of this problem, this particular step, in two different ways. One is actually, in deference to Siddharth, who was salivating over contrastive divergence last class, That's basically the idea here, is instead of all other data instances, pick some other data instances that are typical given the current network configuration. Suppose you know the network configuration, you should be able to sample from that network configuration. Okay? And then compute, let's say, 10 or 15 or 100 data instances and do this expectation only over them. That's a very reasonable thing to do. And in fact, it has pretty good theoretical properties. Okay? The second idea, and that's basically contrastive divergence, and to do that, what normally is done is you do Markov chain Monte Carlo on the network to generate the samples. Except in the very beginning, MCMC might give unlikely samples. Only at the stationary distribution would it give the samples proportional to their probabilities. So what you need to do is run the MCMC to stationary distribution, and sometimes it can take a long time. So what they try to do is initialize the MCMC starting with the data. There is a little statement in the paper which sort of mentions that. And so you start with a good initialization, run a few iterations of MCMC, and then take the next 100 samples. And then say, maximize this. You take the difference between log of the data and log of these samples, log of the probability of these samples. Okay? That would be an approximation to the gradient you wanted to compute. And contrastive divergence is much simpler to compute, and that's the reason. And in fact, it seems to have reasonably good properties in terms of convergence. And so that's the reason it's extremely popular right now. The other is pseudo-likelihood, where what you wind up doing is you essentially say to compute the probability of a configuration, previously you had to, for each configuration, you had to look at the network and multiply the exact CPD tables. Now you could just say, I will make a simpler version of it, which is the probability of a configuration is probability of the value of each of the variables given just everybody else, given everybody else. Okay, so instead of xi given just its parents in the network, you'd say xi given all the nodes. Okay, if I give all the nodes, then essentially the Bayes network, Markov network, say only the ones in the Markov blanket will matter. And so you can compute this in this way, which would be actually not the true probability, but it actually is consistent in the sense if you were to optimize with it, it will have the same optimum as the true log likelihood. But if you stop in the middle, you could be, if you stop in the middle with this, you might at least be here. If you stop in the middle with this, you might be here. Do you see what I'm saying? So that's the kind of thing they mean by saying pseudo likelihood may not actually, sometimes on certain kinds of data, it might give pretty bad results. Okay, but the take home point here is it's all gradient computation, efficient computation of gradient. Okay, and you would like to just approximate it any arbitrary way, but the previous slide says because these are multi-dimensional vectors, if you're not careful, if you do random approximation, then you may go off in a completely wrong direction. So you then try to look for other functions which closely approximate what log likelihood is trying to do, and then find their gradients. And in general, what happens is for those guys, the gradients would be easier to compute from the data without actually having the inference step. That was the point they're making in the paper. This has really nothing to do with MLNs. It's something to do with MN. And it's useful to know, right? Because they didn't make the problem. It's like we didn't start the fire. We are just dealing with it, okay? If anything, in fact, they have fewer parameters to learn for Markov-logic networks. So we'll stop here. People are trying to get into this class. The next time we meet is on Friday, and then the last time we meet is on next Monday.